Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have here on the show once again, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month, she's here on the program, it's always a Tuesday, to talk about lawn and garden care. And this is your opportunity to ask questions about things that grow in the home landscape. If you've had some problem and you're not quite sure how to deal with it, you are thinking about something new, you're thinking about making changes, moving things around, any and all of that. We can talk about houseplants, but also things like trees, shrubs, grass, ornamentals, stuff you can eat, any and all of that that grows in the home landscape. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-945 for Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Glad to have you here once again.
Good morning. Good morning.
I know there are a few things we talked about, you're talking about. Maybe let's do one that's easy right up front, and that is lawn fertilization. You said if you're only going to do it once, now is the time.
Yeah, it really is. And they really have found, especially where there are cool season grasses, so things like Kentucky bluegrass, perennial ryegrass, that really this is the time to do it. And you know, how many times you fertilize is really up to you, really. You don't have to fertilize at all. But if you really want, we have found that lawns tend to be healthier if you can give them a little bit of fertilizer at least once a year. And that way they're better at out-competing weeds and, you know, not having those bare spots where weeds might come in. So if you do want to just do that basics, this would be the time to do it.
Okay. And if you have some places that some bare spots you're hoping to do a little overseeding, we do that now?
Yeah, I'd certainly do that now. I wouldn't wait too much later if you're going to be doing some overseeding. And overseeding is actually where you just put the seed on top of existing turf. But the biggest thing with that, of course, is to make sure you get good seed-to-soil contact. You've got to get the seed down into the soil. You can even rent things called slit seeders that actually put a slit in the soil and drops the seed down in. And that's really your best bet if you're going to do large areas. Otherwise, you could just rake it in. But you just need it. Don't just put it on top of the turf itself. Otherwise, it's just really expensive bird seed.
Do you have strong feelings about particular varieties when it comes to what kind of grass seed you're going to use?
Yeah, well, probably the biggest thing is for people just to kind of get an idea, obviously, whether it's sun or shade. And you just really want to, I guess, the few things, mostly around here, we like Kentucky bluegrass. And usually we're going to have a Kentucky bluegrass, usually perennial ryegrass mix in there. But you don't want a lot of perennial ryegrass because it's not as good a turf, long-term turf. So you might have maybe up to 20% perennial ryegrass in there, but most of it be Kentucky bluegrass. And so those are a few things to think about. But the other thing is just to make sure that, you know, you get what you pay for pretty much in seeds. Mm-hmm. If you go with really cheap seed, you're going to get a cheap lawn. And it may look fine for a year, but then after that, you get some disease problems. You get some other things coming in. So you want to make sure that when you buy seed, it'll say stuff like, it'll actually have, you know, we have cultivars of peonies and mums and all those things. It'll actually have names next to it. So it might say maybe for a shady lawn, you might see Kentucky Bluegrass Glade, Kentucky Bluegrass Eclipse, and it'll actually have, you know, two or three of those in there. And that's really what you want. So you want some diversity in there. So if we do have some problems or disease, insects or whatever, it's not going to wipe out your whole lawn. So trying to, you know, spend money and get some good seed probably is the bottom line.
There was for a while, there was in one of the local places that greenhouses sold plants had a blend of Kentucky bluegrass that had four different cultivars in it. And I thought, well, this is really great. And I had been buying that for a while. And then for some reason that they didn't have it anymore. And as I look around at what they have in different places for Kentucky bluegrass, you're lucky if maybe there's one cultivar, and it don't have that strength of having the different varieties. And it seems to me, well, you know, that's a good thing if you have some diversity of your cultivars. But it seems to me that mostly what you find is just it's going to have one.
Yeah.
In there, probably.
Yeah, I hadn't really noticed that, but that's a good point. I haven't really been shopping for grass seed, but it might be one of those things that maybe you have to make your own mix. You know, you may decide that you want to go ahead and maybe you'll end up buying two different kinds and then mixing it yourself if you really do find that you want that diversity. And I'm with you. I think it's in the long run and you're better off. I mean, it may not show up that first year, but then, you know, several years down the road, because most of the time, you know, you're going to put a lawn in and hopefully it's going to last for several years before you have to do it again. So you're going to have to live with this grass. People also might think if you're really going for maybe a little lower maintenance or maybe an area where you're not going to be fertilizing, or, you know, you may want to think about some of the turf type tall fescues. It's a little different color. It's kind of a it's a lighter green. It's not that kind of dark green that we get with Kentucky bluegrass, but it's still a quality lawn. The leaf blade is a little bit wider. It's not the pasture tall fescue. It's actually a much better for turf, but it's much better under conditions where you're not going to be watering, not going to be fertilizing. So you may want to even think about maybe even a different lawn altogether and go with the turf type tall fescues, but it's mainly sunny areas that those would be good for.
And that's the other thing is that, yes, there are grass varieties that they tell you will grow in shade, but there's a certain level, it doesn't, even if it's a shade, it's supposed to be shade tolerant, there's a certain level of light that it's got to get. And and there's some line that you're going to cross where it doesn't matter if it says it will grow in shade, it's not going to grow. So you also have to consider, do you really, in a particular area, if you're having trouble getting the grass to grow, do you really have enough sun, even for a shade-tolerant variety?
Yeah, absolutely. And that, and that's a good point, because even the shade-tolerant grasses need some sunlight. I mean, if you walk around in the forest, you don't see a whole lot of lawn growing. And there's a reason for that, because the grasses are mainly open area type of plants, and so they don't do well in shady spots. And so usually we say if you're not getting at least 4 hours of some sort of light, dappled light or something, then you're going to have a hard time trying to grow any grass there. So you may want to think about some ground covers. You know, even there's lots of perennial shade plants. So you may want to think about actually redoing certain areas so you don't have to fight so hard, especially under something like maple trees. It tends to be very dry shade, and it's very difficult to get grass to grow under those areas. Yeah. So you may decide to you just need to
And there are a lot of things that you can that will grow successfully there.
Absolutely.
You just have to sort of know what conditions are, and then look for specifically those kind of plants. And I think that people will find there are a lot of different things that will grow. It's just that it's not going to be grass. It's not going to be like lawn. So if that's what you want, well, that's not going to work.
Right.
You can do a lot of really nice things. And, of course, the virtue of them is that you don't have to mow them.
There you go.
All right. We have some callers here. Let's talk with somebody first in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. I have questions about dahlias and morning glories. First of all, how do you pronounce it? Is it do you say dahlia or do you say dahlia?
I say dahlia, but I'm from the Midwest, so you know, what do I know? But either way, I think you could probably say it. I usually say dahlia. But.
I bought a package of two. It was a mixture of two at one of the big box stores. I'd never grown them before, and I was really pleased with the color of one, and I'd like to carry them over. I think you have to dig them up, dig up the roots. Do you have suggestions on storage?
Well, probably the big thing, one thing you'll notice is that they'll continue to flower even when it starts getting cool, which is just fine. So you don't have to necessarily dig them up, you know, immediately before a hard, you just don't want them to go through a hard freeze.
Okay.
So even if they go through a few frosts, that's just fine. You just don't want to get them to the point where they get really, really cold. And since they bloom so late, it's hard to go ahead and dig them up. I mean, just because you don't want to. But then go ahead and dig them up. Let them dry a little bit. You'll find that they look like a sweet potato kind of when you dig them up. They just look like a bunch of sweet potatoes. Let them dry a little bit. You know, I wouldn't, if they're really wet, I'd make sure you let the soil dry a little bit. And then go ahead and put them in something, whether it's whatever you might have. It might be vermiculite or sawdust or something that sort of helps to maintain the moisture. Because the one thing you'll notice with dahlias, they have a tendency, like trying to keep sweet potatoes, is they tend to have a tendency to dry out too much and they get real wrinkly. So that would be one thing, to put them in some sort of storage like that, whether it's a cardboard box or whatever. And then keep them as cool as you can, but not cold. So, you know, if you can find a spot, 55 degrees would be perfect, but, you know, sometimes that's tough. So make sure you put them in a cool spot. And then it's a good idea to check them periodically, like in December or so. Just kind of open it up and see what's going on. If they're really, really shriveled, then add a little moisture to the sawdust or whatever that you have.
I have a friend who carried some over and thought that they looked fine and put them in the ground and they didn't flower this year.
Oh, really? Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily know why, unless they weren't getting enough sun, or she fertilized them at all, or try to push them along that way.
I asked her whether she did. She said no, she just stuck them in the same place as she always had, and didn't bloom. Not mine, so I don't know the details.
Yeah, they don't like to be too wet, and that would be one thing. And certainly this year, there might have been some areas that normally would have been just fine, might have been a little bit wet in some spots, so that would be the one thing I'd wonder.
My next question is that morning glories. I didn't realize how vigorous they would be in our soil, and I planted some on the. I use reinforcing wire, mm-hmm. Concrete reinforcing. I don't know what you call it. It looks like huge hardware cloth.
Sure.
You can stick your hand through the openings.
Okay.
Anyway, I use those for my tomatoes. So they're much taller and much stronger than the little dinky things you can buy in most mm-hmm. garden centers, because my tomatoes get pretty going pretty strongly. Anyway, I thought the tomatoes would be able to survive with the morning glories. Little did I know that the morning glories would soon cover mm-hmm. the tomatoes. So I, as I realized this, I cut them back and cut them down. But this year, I didn't plant them again. I have morning glories, and now this time they're taking over the peppers. I thought they were annuals. Do they reseed themselves?
Yes,
really
they do, prolifically.
Oh.
Prolifically. And you will have them from years to come, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, okay. So I should, next year when I see them, I should yank them out early then.
Yeah, before they go to seed. And then any of it that you have now, I try to get them out as much as you can and get those flower heads and those seed heads out of there and then put them. I have a compost area where I put things that I'm afraid are going to reseed, and that's that particular compost. That's where I put stuff like that in it. So if you can have a certain spot, or whether you can bury them somewhere else or bury them deep somewhere else or somehow, you know, get rid of them or just try to get them out of that area. But you'll notice that in next spring, you'll have all kinds of little sprouts popping up, unfortunately.
Ah, okay. Well, I did see south of on Ray Street in a farm field, it seemed to be infested with the blue variety of the yeah. cultivated morning glories. So,
yeah, unfortunately, they're vigorous is an understatement.
Okay. Some of these
they're beautiful.
Some of these plants should come with caveats, you know.
Yeah.
Little buyer heads
buyer
up.
Beware.
Okay, thanks.
Right. Yeah, good luck. And I should say, you know, for a lot of those seedling kinds of things, that if you can get a mulch on early in the season, a lot of those need light in order to germinate. So if you can get the mulch on the soil early and, you know, not do a whole lot of, you know, messing with the soil, you'll find that a lot of the seeds will just stay down there and not germinate for you. So sometimes getting a mulch on early helps.
Okay. Next, we'll talk to someone on a cell phone in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Morning.
I have some lovely, gorgeous azalea in front of my business, and they're getting quite tall, and they're quite elderly. I'm sure they're at least 15-year-old, and I'm wondering how to care for them during the winter and if they should be cut back.
Yeah, usually we don't do a whole lot of cutting back on azaleas. They're not necessarily really good at sprouting out again. So you can do some light pruning on them and find that it's fine. Especially sometimes people with some of the earlier growth, the growth that comes out after they flower, sometimes you can cut that back or trim that back. But boy, when you start getting into some of that older wood, they don't sprout very well. So I will kind of warn you a little bit about not doing a whole lot of pruning on that. Azaleas, rhododendrons, of course, like an acidic soil. So you just want to always make sure that, you know, you might fertilize periodically and certainly make sure that you're using something for acid-loving plants. This time of year, if they're still looking nice and green, then obviously they must be fairly happy that way. But it is a good idea to periodically maybe put some sulfur on the soil, sort of work in a little sulfur on the top surface to sort of help make sure that you have that acidic soil.
Right.
And it sounds like if they've been there that long, then they must be in a pretty happy spot.
Yeah.
So it doesn't sound like you're going to have to do a whole lot over the wintertime if they've survived that many winters.
I noticed that some of the leaves are beginning to turn kind of yellow.
Yeah.
Leaves, but does that mean they need that acid, you know?
Right, right. So certainly if the newer leaves are turning yellow, that's a good indication that you're getting some iron deficiency and that they need a lot of iron, and unfortunately it's not available well at the soil pHs that we have, and so that's why we have to have more acidic soil. So if they're getting, especially the newer leaves are yellow, then definitely you need to be thinking about putting, you know, muriacid or something on them, and you might even do a foliar feed on those just to make sure that you can sort of correct that, because you don't want them going into winter feeling that kind of, you know, deficiency. So,
okay. I hope that, I think we kind of lost the caller there.
Yeah, I think
we dropped off the cell. I hope that he got it all. Other questions are welcome here. We have some other folks. Sandy Mason's the guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program once a month. It's always on Tuesday to talk about lawn and garden care. and questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And our next caller is in Mattoon, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah.
I have a pussy willow that's probably 4 years old or so, give or take a year. It's been doing real well. It's got fine, lush green growth on it. It's a multi-trunk that splits and split at ground level. And this year, I've been losing trunks one at a time. We've lost like three so far. They just seem to be rotting at the ground level, just above ground level. And I got another one that looks like it's starting to go because it's leaning out. And I'm just wondering if you have any idea what's going on in it. Any guess what we can do to save what's left?
Is it sending up new shoots from the base as well as losing a few? It's sending up some new ones?
Not from the base, no.
Not really. Yeah, I mean, willows are great plants, and they're fairly durable, but unfortunately they get a lot of insect and disease problems, certainly a lot of disease problems. And so as they age, you'll start noticing these kinds of things sort of show up. Usually they don't have a lot of problems with root rot problems because normally they're pretty good at really wet areas, and you'll see a lot of times with willows at wet areas. But it sounds like you're getting some kind of root rot, stem rot kind of thing.
Yeah.
The good news, I guess, is that pussy willows, or actually all the willows for the most part, are really easy to propagate. And all you have to do is just take one of the stems, and actually just stick it in the ground. I mean, this sounds really funny, but you really do stick it in the ground and they'll re-root. And you may think about going ahead and doing that in case these really start to go down to the point where, you know, they're really not looking good and you need to replace them. But they grow really fast. So I would think about maybe starting some new ones from some fresh cuttings. And then I wouldn't necessarily give up on them because you may find that the next year they'll go ahead and send up some new shoots from the base.
How big a cutting do I need to start propagating? I mean, do I take something smaller or do I take one of the bigger ones from down lower?
Actually, either one, to be honest with you. I've seen people actually, take whole trunks of trees, as in 4 or 5 inches in diameter, and stick them in the ground and they'll root. As long as they're wet, they'll root. So they're really very easy to root. Most of the time, we probably get something that's maybe, the size of your thumb.
Okay.
And get one that's maybe, 12 inches, at least 12 inches or so, 12 to 18 inches, and then put that in the ground, and you'll find that they'll root very quickly. And you can even root them in water if you want to go that route, too.
Do I have to do anything to prepare the ground or use root powder or anything?
No,
on it,
they are so easy. They're amazingly easy.
We saw one, and what really we were hoping to get was one that it's a regular pussy. It's a pussy willow. It has the catkins and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it grows, it's up a few feet, and then it grows over kind of like an umbrella.
Oh, yeah. There's one called Weeping Sally that's a weeper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really pretty. Very
that's
pretty.
That's what it's called?
Yeah, yeah. Now, that one, of course, is a little bit different because it's been grafted so that you get this weeping kind of thing. So it's a little bit different. That one's not quite as easy to start on your own. But they're very nice. The only bad part is the Japanese beetles really like them, so I will warn you that.
Yeah, well, we've had those for years, and they're actually starting to thin out down here.
That's good. So. That's always good to hear.
And they like the other pussy willow, too.
Right.
All righty.
Okay.
All right.
Good
Thanks
luck.
For the call.
Uh-huh.
I want to try and get back to our previous cell phone call that we lost. He did have one other question I think he wanted to ask, and he's on line number 2. Hello.
Yes, thank you very much.
Sure.
Didn't mean to be rude. I didn't hang up.
Sure.
A quick question. I have a lovely group of wildflowers that are perennial. And they're starting now to turn they're very tall, and they're starting now to turn like a straw. Should I cut those back now?
Yeah, once they turn yellow and kind of really die back, that's fine. You can go ahead and cut them back at that point. You just don't want to do it while they're still green. So, no, that's fine. If you want to do a little cleanup, that's fine. You may find that you want some of them to reseed themselves. I don't know what all you have, but you may find you want to leave some of the seed heads out there.
Okay.
So that's kind of up to you, and depending on what it is.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure.
All right, very good. And we'll continue here. And our next caller is in Whiteheath, line 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I'm just calling about the grass. Now, usually in the fall, I have a lawn service come in and do coring in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
But now this year, I've had to, my grass looks pretty bad. And I'm putting out seed now. And I'm concerned that that'll just dig up all the new grass that I'm putting in now. And also, the lawn service, I don't know if they put weed killer on in the fall or not. Do you think they do?
More than likely they do.
But, I mean, what does it do then to the new grass? That's another concern of mine, too.
Well, usually we don't want to put a weed killer on until you've mowed a new grass like three times. You want to make sure that it's up and doing its thing. Even though they're broadleaf weed killers, it still can affect the young seedlings, even though they're grasses. Uh-huh. And so normally we wouldn't do it when you've just had a brand new lawn pop up. We'd wait until it gets mowed a couple of times. But that depends on, you know, if you don't have a lot of broadleaf weeds, maybe that's not an issue for you anyway, and you need to discuss that with them. You know, if you had things like, you know, dandelions and things that you're trying to get rid of, then that this might be a time where they might be doing some broadleaf weed killer.
Well, what about the coring, though? Could it wait till spring?
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly. And it doesn't even necessarily, again, it just sort of depends on your situation. But, you know, usually we do coring because you have soil compaction problems.
Well,
if you have high,
lots of clay.
Yeah, if you have high clay content, certainly it might be core aerified. So you don't necessarily have to do it every year. Or if you have a lot of high thatch in your lawn, you may find that you do core aerifying. But it certainly can, we normally would do it when the lawn is actively growing. And that certainly could be fall or spring.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
All right, very good. Back here to Urbana. It's the next caller. Line one. Hello.
Tinted lights. I'm sorry if you've already taken this up, but I want to ask about some problems I'm having with quaking aspens.
Mm-hmm.
I planted these trees, I think it was around 15 years ago, although it could have been a little bit longer ago than that. And they, at first they were quite healthy. They did very well. They grew up to, oh, I don't know, maybe 30 or 40 feet in height. And now, one after another, they're all dying.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether that's just because that's as long as they normally live, or whether there's something that's getting to them.
Yeah. Well, it could be a number of things. They're not a long-lived tree normally. So I will tell you that. And that whole grouping, they're kind of like willows in the sense that they do get a lot of insect and disease problems. And certainly as they age, then these diseases often start showing up. So is it just that the leaves turn brown and fall off? Or
yeah,
you're seeing
leaves turn brown, they fall off. And then if you just leave it there long enough, the bark starts to slough off and the tree and all the leaves are gone. So I guess the first one died maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And we took another one down this summer, and now I look out there, and there's another one that, you know, at this time of year, all the leaves are turning yellow and brown.
Right, right.
And the ones adjacent to it have, you know, very healthy-looking green leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So now these the several that I planted were individual trees, but then they send out underground, what are they called, rhizomes or
something
like that.
Right.
And then there are others that are growing up next to those that are, I guess, clones of one of them, and they are unaffected. So, one hypothesis that I had was that my neighbor was going out there at night and putting on herbicide on the little babies that pop up on his side of the fence, and then maybe that stuff was working back through the rhizomes and killing my trees. But if that were the case, I think it would be killing the young ones as well as the old.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Right, right. So you're right. It certainly would be affecting the young ones, and actually probably more so than the bigger ones.
All right. So it's probably something else that's getting to them.
I would almost bet you're probably getting a disease problem coming in. It's not a long-term tree for us, and it is one that in this particular area, we tend to not eat well. You don't see it much at all, and you certainly don't see really big ones around here.
Are they not well acclimated to central Illinois?
It really is not. You know, it's too hot. They really don't, you know, they don't like our summers is really what it is. The winters aren't the issue, it's the summers. It's too hot, so they have some real issues with that. And then when they get stressed, then these diseases start coming in.
Yeah, well,
so.
I got these, I ordered these by mail, just bare-rooted from a nursery in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I guess they're more indigenous up there.
Right. They like the colder temperatures. They really do much better in those kind of areas.
Yeah,
and we just it's just too hot here for us, unfortunately. Yeah. And so I guess it'd be one of those things. Enjoy them while you can. But I'm not sure there's too much you can do about it other than.
Yeah, I guess the babies keep coming up. And
there you go.
As long as I nurture those, I can probably keep them going indefinitely.
Oh, yeah, you probably could. Probably good, really.
Okay.
Right. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right, very good. Let's go next to Chicago. This is line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I'm calling about the discussion you had of dahlias.
Mm-hmm.
You were telling someone how to store them, which indicates they didn't know too much about it and were just starting out.
Mm-hmm.
And they also said they had dahlias that didn't sprout. One thing that might be, you know, interesting information to have out there is that a dahlia tuber isn't like a potato with eyes all over it. All the eyes are up in at the stem end, and some actually up the stem. And I've actually, in my lifetime, received from well-meaning friends a dahlia tuber, which was trimmed like a nice, clean potato. And there were no
at the ends?
They trimmed it real nice. It was clean. But it, of course, had no chance to sprout. But especially who were new at it should realize that a dahlia doesn't have a bud distribution like a potato. They're all at the end.
Yeah. But in this case, it sounded like it was growing. It just wasn't flowering. At least that's the way I understood. But you're right. That's a good point. That's a good point. Don't start cleaning these like they're, I mean, they are just like a sweet potato. They really aren't like a potato.
End. Yeah, it's all right. A woman. No, I understood that she had good-looking tubers that she planted because my experience is with dahlia, I've never seen one that didn't flower.
Yeah.
They come up and they're on their way. If you plant them too late, they flower on short stalks. But that's something that people are, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing to remind people. Is to not.
It's not like a white potato.
Yeah,
all the action's at that end.
Okay, good point. Okay.
All right, thanks for the call. We are at our midpoint already here in this hour of Focus 580. Sandy Mason is here. She's horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County monthly on a Tuesday. She's here. We talk about things that grow around the home landscape. Also, houseplants, we can do that too, but we talk a lot about trees and shrubs and flowers and ornamental plants and many and all of that. If you have some kind of problem, you can call in and tell us about it. Or also, if you're thinking about, you're already thinking about next year, thinking about changing things, moving things around, and you need some advice, you can give us a call. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next is Champaign, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. Yes, I have two climbing plants, and I'm just wondering whether or not I'm doing something wrong in the fall. One is a wisteria, and the other is just a climbing rose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've had them for about 4 years, and I have not gotten one bloom on either one of them.
So do you prune them at all? Or?
Well, that's the thing. I think that with the exception of 1 year, I have pruned them back to about maybe a foot off the ground.
At what time of year?
In the fall.
Okay. Well, that's definitely probably the problem with the rose, in that some of the roses, especially some of the climbing-type roses, bloom on old wood. And so if you cut that out, so it's kind of like forsythias and stuff, where if you don't have that old wood there, then they grow, but they never flower.
Oh, dear. Okay.
So you really need those climbers, and especially if any of the roses, if you have a rose that only blooms once, then it's and especially blooms early in the spring, okay, then it's probably blooming on old wood, and so the time to prune it is right after they flower.
Oh, okay.
So don't. So hopefully you haven't pruned it yet.
Okay. What about the wisteria?
Yeah, the wisteria is another issue. Wisteria is one of those, you know, very frustrating plants. And I've talked to a number of people, and myself included, that have had wisterias for years and have done everything to them, I included, to get them to flower, and they never flower.
Oh, no.
So I'm personally very frustrated at some of them. So I think some of them are just cantankerous and just don't want to flower. So you may have one of those. What I have found, and one that I'm kind of excited about, there's a new variety called Amethyst Falls.
Uh-huh.
And it actually blooms in the pot when you purchase it. I mean, it already has flowers on it as a young plant.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what I'm doing. I'm actually replacing it. Now, yours is still fairly young. What did you say? It's about 4 years or so?
Yeah, I think it's about 4 years old now.
Yeah, usually what we say is if they don't start blooming at about 7 years or so, then it probably isn't going to bloom for you.
I'm staring at it right now.
Yeah. Now, they need there's no problem with hacking them back. And actually, they do better if you hack them back.
Uh-huh.
If you do a lot of heavy pruning on them, they seem to actually flower better.
Okay.
So that thing's not an issue. But I just will warn you that I've talked to plenty of people that it just cannot get them into flower. So I would purchase one that's already in flower.
Okay, or I'll just wait 3 more years.
And then, I mean, mine's 10 years old, and I have done everything to it, believe me.
Yeah.
I've cussed at it, I've done everything at it, and still will not flower. So
mulch?
It's out
Does
of there.
Does it need mulching in the fall?
They really don't. They're very, very vigorous vines.
Okay.
In case you probably will notice that if you haven't already. They really don't need a lot of mulching. Sun is a good idea, so hopefully they're getting plenty of sun. That certainly might be one issue for them to flower, but I think a lot of it is just the age of the plant, and then sometimes they're just ornery.
Okay, well, I think I'll be patient with this guy.
Yeah. Give him a few more years.
Yeah.
Then.
Well, thank you.
And then off with his head.
Thanks very much. And have you tried talking nicely to it?
That's it.
That's right. See? When my plants are doing well, I always tell them how pretty they are. I do. As a matter of fact, yes, I do. So if you cuss at it, now, you know, you're not going to get good results that way.
Maybe I should be nicer to
it. That's right. You should be nicer to wisteria.
Yeah, still off with his head.
Okay. Urbana next, line three. Hello.
Hi. I'm calling about vines, too. I never know what to do with vines in the spring or even in the late fall. You've got all that brown stuff climbing all over trellises, like clematis. Should you? I want to get rid of all of that because it's very unsightly, but does it need it?
Well, usually with clematis, you certainly don't necessarily have to do that. But what you'll find is that if you don't do that, they get kind of, you know, they don't look all that great. Plus, you'll find that the flowers, they end up flowering higher and higher and higher. and so you don't get the flowers like at eye level like we like to have them. So that's the one thing you'll also notice. So we like to prune them back. And usually it's not. Usually we'd probably do it in the spring when they first start to send out. You know, you start to see a little bit of green coming out.
Yeah.
Then you can do actually some fairly heavy pruning on most of the clematis and they'll be just fine.
Yeah. Hey, I have a wisteria, and 2 years, last year and the year before, it bloomed great. This year, not so well. It must be about, 5 or 6 years old. But as far as talking nice to it, I think it came with a machete be more appropriate.
Ooh.
Those things, it's taken the roof off the shed.
Oh, yeah.
They are growers.
Yeah, they are not for the timid, are they? I mean, and they need a heavy trellis. None of those small things.
Yeah, I got a 2x4 trellis.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, they're very, very vigorous. Well,
they're
congratulations.
Glorious,
congratulations that you got yours to flower.
I didn't get it to flower.
It just did.
Well, thank you for your advice.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Where are we going next to line number one? This is someone in Chicago. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a question. Around this neighborhood, I see a lot of new windows being put in all these buildings. Does that affect houseplants' sunlight through the glass? You've got all different kinds of glass now,
right.
They told me.
Right. And it actually does cut down on some of the UV rays. But usually we still find, and what I've been told by the glass folks, because I've asked this question too, that it still allows enough light in that you can still have houseplants. But you may find that maybe there's certain really high light plants, maybe they don't do quite as well or grow as vigorously as they used to. That might be one thing. But usually you still should get enough light that they're still going to grow well for you. And obviously, you know, it might be something, you know, they can benefit from lights that you even have in your home. Obviously, if you have fluorescent lights or whatever, they will benefit from that as well.
I see. So, what is the average life of a catalpa tree? I sold a building 30 years ago. It was a gorgeous tree. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if it'd still be alive.
Sure. I mean, they're not in the oak category by any stretch, but you certainly should see, I would say, probably 60, 80 years out of a catalpa. Now, sometimes they get a few disease problems, and you'll see some dieback and stuff, but still, they'll hang in there for a long time. They're pretty tough trees. So.
Yeah, it was planted about 1930, I was told.
Yeah.
And it was just high enough that the kids could not reach those things that came, like a stringer that would hang.
Oh, the pods
down.
And stuff?
Yeah, they'd reach up and pull those off.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was a height back in 1970.
Yeah.
But it could still be there then.
Yeah, oh, sure. I wouldn't give up on it, sure, sure.
Oh, thank you.
Uh-huh, right, sure.
Thank you. And then, next we go to Vermilion County, a caller here on line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I just found some amaryllis that I forgot about that I brought in last fall. And they've been in my basement in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Should I put them out now, or should I just let them go another winter? Is there any saving
mm-hmm.
them?
Mm-hmm. Well, do they still feel firm? I mean, do they still feel like there's something there?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I would just check, and they still should feel nice and firm, like an onion or something. They still should have something to them. And then often you'll still see just a little bit of a green sprout at the top, mm-hmm. you know, still with a little leaves coming out. And so that would be one thing I'd look for. Otherwise, you know, if they're, you know, just dried out and stuff, they're probably long gone by now.
Mm-hmm.
But they're pretty tough. So I would probably what, you know, you're going to get them out of cycle here a little bit. But I personally, I would go ahead and pot them up now and then go for it. And then usually, you know, within 8 weeks or so, you'll get flowers.
Should I put them outside?
Pardon?
Should I put them outside?
You certainly could do that as long as they don't get too cold. That would be the big thing. I would probably, you know, maybe toward the end of September, certainly I'd be thinking about bringing them in. Oh. But I put them in a shady spot.
Okay.
You know, if you want to do that and sort of hopefully get a little growth on them first.
Well, I've had some of them 15 years. And,
wow.
You know, I found that they sort of feed better outside and take care of
Yeah, they do. So. Yeah, they do like summers outside. They like summer vacations. You're okay. Absolutely right.
Thanks.
All right.
Don't we all?
Call. You said, yeah. Let's see what we get next here. We got Champagne, and this is line number two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I just moved to Champagne, and my backyard has what I would refer to as a ground cover. It's not grass, but it's a leafy thing. It's about 3 inches high, and the leaf itself is about 3 inches broad. It's cardioid shape. With sort of little lobes around the side. It almost looks like a violet. And do you know what it is? Do I mow it?
Wow.
How do I take care of it?
Well, number one, welcome to Champagne. I'm not sure. Boy, I'm trying to think of what that, and how big a leaf is. I wonder if it's not Creeping Charlie or something.
It's, I don't know, my neighbors also have it.
Well, which could still be Creeping Charlie. Yeah.
Everybody has Creeping Charlie.
As I say, it's a cardioid shape. You know what I mean by that? It's a heart shape.
Yeah. See, that's why I'm wondering if it's not Creeping Charlie.
Quite broad and round and little tiny lobes all around the edge.
Yeah. See, I'm thinking it's probably Creeping Charlie, which, you know, it does make a nice ground cover now, but people often don't want it because it tends to be very, again, very vigorous and gets into your flower beds and everything else.
Uh-huh.
So probably what you might want to do, what would be a good idea since you're here in Champaign, if you want to bring a sample down to us to the Extension office.
Okay.
We're at 801 North Country Fair Drive,
okay,
which is way on the west end of town.
All right.
And just come on out. We're there 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. Just bring us a sample. We'll help you figure out what it is and then give you an idea on what
okay,
to do with
it. But does it grow any taller, do you know?
I would imagine it's Creeping Charlie, and it doesn't get tall.
Because it's neat if I don't have to cut the grass.
Well, and you may find, and maybe the owners before you decided they were just going to go that route.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a vigorous thing, and we'll make a nice ground cover. It just,
okay.
You won't have much of anything else.
Thanks a lot. Sure.
All right.
Well, thank you for the call.
Sure.
Okay, let's go on to next caller. This is Tolono and line one. Hello.
Hi, my name's, never mind.
you can tell us your name.
I've got a Christmas cactus of my mother's, and it was her grandmother's, and it's not doing so well. It has, the trunks are getting real soft.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if there's any way I could make a cutting on it to replant it.
Yeah, they do. Christmas cactus have a tendency that sometimes they will rot. Especially if they've been in the pot for a long time and maybe they get a little overwatered, but so they certainly can rot. Yes, you can take cuttings of those, and you just want to take a segment that's maybe 4 inches or so long and just go ahead and put that in like some, I don't know, soilless mix or something that's a lightweight mix, and then put it in a little pot and then put like a little, I don't know, plastic bag or something over it to try to keep in a little moisture. And they will go ahead and root, and that would be a really good thing to do just in case this other one doesn't quite make it. The other one, the original plant, I think I would think about repotting it. Has it been repotted for a while?
No, it hasn't.
Yeah.
It's been in the same pot for quite some years.
Yeah, and so I would think about really repotting it because you may find that there's certain sections of it that are rotten that you just need to get out of there, and then there are other sections that still look nice and healthy, and then often you can save parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'd probably do both of those things because you certainly obviously don't want to lose that plant. Yeah.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right,
good
thank
luck.
You. To line number three, and this is someone in Champagne. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
I wanted to say something about wildflowers. If the wildflowers are in an urban setting and they're wildflowers in a can or something like that, and they're mainly annuals, then clearing them off is a good thing. But if your wildflowers are really wildflowers, Illinois, and they're prairie sort of wildflowers, then it would be fairly natural to leave the litter to accumulate so that the mice and insects and other microbes can use that litter over the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's in a suitable place, you may burn it in the spring, you may burn it at other times, But the litter is part of the act, and it's part of the beauty of the prairie. So I would say that there is that alternative.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's
some people will burn to within 4 inches of a frame house, so it is possible to burn, but you need to check with the fire department if you're going
to. And you also need to check with your city to see if you can even burn in your city. But yeah, you're right. But that's a good point. I mean, it is all a part of it, and certainly the seeds and everything else that's there really does help to replenish the soil. And
how it falls over is interesting too. Big bluestem will fall down like ninepins, whereas other plants will stay up over winter. So there's an interesting ambiance to the dead prairie.
Sure. No, that's a good idea. Sometimes people just need to go through a cycle and see how it works for them.
Yeah.
So good point.
Bye.
All right, thank you. And say we have somebody else here. This is someone in Atwood, line 4. Hello.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
I have two questions. One's about a flower and one's about a tree.
Okay.
The flower is a lily. It's an orange lily, and it's growing in a group like irises would. When would be a good time to transfer those to another area?
Okay, and this is a day lily or a lily?
Well, it's only out for a few days, so it's more of a day lily.
Oh, day lily. Yeah, pretty much you can, you know, as far as day lilies, you certainly could do that now. That's not a problem. And actually, day lilies, we can pretty much move any time. They're really good, you know, during the growing season, you pretty much move any time. But this would be an excellent time, actually, to move a lot of perennials, you know, whether they're day lilies or peonies or some of those, which would just be fine.
Okay, and my next question is about, I've got about a 10-foot small maple tree. It's about an inch and a half in diameter trunk, and it's got some small branches about the size of your finger down about 2.5 foot.
Mm-hmm.
Will it grow up and those be tall enough, or do I need to trim those off to be out of headway and such?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't be, you know, eventually you're going to have to trim those off. You know, if you do want headway on them, you could leave them down depending on where they are. And if they're in your open yard, you may decide you want those lower branches. But they really have found that those lower branches are important for the plant itself. So I wouldn't be too anxious to take them off, and just realize eventually you will. So I would just leave them on for now.
Okay.
And just not worry about it too much, because it really does help the overall health of the tree to leave those on.
So it's not stunning the overall growth height or
nope. And actually, it's better for the tree to leave those lower branches on. So don't get too excited about taking them off yet. Once we start to get some, you know, pretty good size to them, you know, start getting 3 or 4 inches in diameter, maybe, then I'd really, you know, obviously think about taking them off at that time. But as long as they're not an issue for you as far as mowing or whatever, I wouldn't be too anxious to take them off.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. You know, one of the things that I was thinking about asking, you know, we're now getting to the point here where the season is winding down. A lot of things in the garden are starting to look kind of bedraggled. At the same time, it's going to be a while till we have a frost. Mm-hmm. So what I was wondering about, are there certain things that you could suggest that really come into their own late in the season so that in this last bit of summer, are there some things that are really going to look good that maybe are still going to be flowering, or just maybe start to flower now so that you can have a few things that are still going to be nice really at the end.
Right. And because that's a lot of times that's the part we don't think about too much. Right. But, you know, right now I'm trying to think of some of the things I've seen around. It's certainly all the sedums, the larger sedums, like Autumn Joy is obviously everywhere. But it's a great plant. And, you know, bees and butterflies love it. And it looks great late in the season. Actually, it looks even good early in the season, even before it flowers. So certainly the sedums look great. Matrona is one that I really like. That has kind of reddish stems. But there's a trillion different sedums out there that are good for late season. Certainly asters are certainly starting to come in right now. There's a lot of those late season asters, so you really get some great color now. I have another one that I just really like for late season color is it's called Caryopteris, or also sometimes they call it blue mist shrub. It's kind of, we call it a sub shrub because it's one of those things that kind of forms a woody stem. It's kind of like butterfly bush. It forms a woody stem, but it's a great plant. And there's a yellow one that I really like that has yellow leaves and a blue flowers. And there's one called Worcester Gold is a nice one. But there's one that now has a very dark blue flower with these yellow leaves. And, oh, the contrast is wonderful, called Sunshine Blue. Great plant. And it'll get, you know, about 3 feet tall. You trim a back every early in the season to sort of make sure it's small. But the bees and the butterflies love it, and that contrast, ugh. Just a great, great plant. And it'll bloom, you know, well through September and then even into October. So there really are plenty of plants. If you can get a chance to go out and wander around a little bit, you'll find there's really some. And certainly, you know, we were talking about prairie plants. A lot of the prairie plants really come into their own right now.
Oh, okay. When's the time to start thinking about bulbs for spring flowering bulbs, when you can put them in the ground?
Right. Usually, it's certainly end of September, first of October is really the ideal time to be putting in bulbs. But this would be the time to order them, because a lot of times, mm-hmm. if you want special ones, you need to go ahead and order them. So this would be perfect to order them now to make sure that you have them in time to go ahead and plant them. And there's so many great plants that, you know, some of those what we call minor bulbs that are small things that really do beautifully, like Grecian windflower and even some of the smaller crocuses. So there's some really little things. And the nice thing is the bulbs are very small, so you don't have to dig big holes. So it's not a lot of effort, but you get a lot of bang for your buck for even some of those small bulbs.
Yeah. All right. Columbus, Ohio, believe it or not, we have a caller here on our toll-free line. Hello.
Hi. We have a bed of daylilies and tiger lilies, and they looked great when they bloomed, but now it's just mostly dead leaves. Is mm-hmm. it okay to go ahead and clean that up, or do they need that insulation of the dead leaves?
It really, if you want to go ahead, and actually what I do, and I'm not sure the daylily growers necessarily agree with me on this, but I'm just going to let you know this is what I do. After the daylilies bloom, because they always seem to get these kind of bedraggled and they get these yellow stems and all this kind of stuff, I always just cut them down to the ground after they bloom and let the new green stuff come up. So my answer is yes, you could certainly go ahead and do that if you want to go ahead and clean that up. And they'll do just fine. Most of those two plants are very vigorous plants, and they really usually don't have a big issue of getting through. If I had to leave anything up, I'd probably leave the lilies up. As in the tiger lilies, that foliage up. But certainly the daylilies, you could trim that back and make it look nicer.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Back here to Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a question about planting fritillaria, so they actually come up in the spring. And I also have a question about moving echinacea.
Okay. And so on the fritillarias, you...
I bought them and I put them in the ground, and that's the last I've seen of them.
Aw.
Yeah.
How disappointing. I'm not sure what happened. Would you have noticed anything like voles, or usually they don't bother fritillaries?
We have a surfeit of voles.
Yeah, I wonder if somebody didn't help themselves to them.
Okay, so a little mesh basket then.
Yeah, you're probably going to have to protect them.
Okay.
That would certainly be the issue.
And are they going to increase in size enough? I should think of a really big... Or is it a corm, and is it kind of small?
Now, are you talking about the small? Because there's several different fritillarias. There's giant.
No, I haven't got the sort of that hen and chick. You know, that plaid one.
Uh huh. Uh huh.
That one I haven't gotten to grow, so I haven't put my money into the $5 ones.
Okay. Okay. So the ones you planted were the smaller ones.
Right.
Is that
mm-hmm.
what you're saying? Mm-hmm. And they will reproduce. They do get these other little corm-like things, mm-hmm. and they'll kind of reproduce that way. So you really don't need a big area for you. That's what the question was.
I mean, in terms of the basket.
Oh, the size of the basket.
Right.
I would give them a little bit of space, certainly like 2 inches or so around them, something mm-hmm. like that. But you don't really have to do a whole lot. Because usually, especially with voles, it's that fresh soil. You just planted them. It's easy digging. It's very attractive to a lot of critters. But usually once they get in there for a while, and once the bulbs are in there, they aren't nearly so apt to go for them.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've made a big effort to save echinacea because I've... thought I needed it, and now I've got echinacea
all over the place. Yeah,
it's wonderful, but it's a little overwhelming. Can I move some of those now into places where I think they'd look better, or is that a spring job?
No, actually, purple cone flowers, like a lot of the perennials, you can certainly go ahead and move them now, and you will find they kind of reseed themselves like crazy, but it's a great plant, and mm-hmm. it's a great one to have. So, yeah, I would go ahead and do that now. That's just fine.
And, you know, when you dig them up, it's a nasty-looking kind of root. It's just this bumpy thing, and it doesn't seem to have many small roots coming off. Is that small, that messy-looking lumpy root is going to be enough to move?
Yeah, and that's fine.
Okay.
You will find you may have some of the really big ones. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I don't think move quite as readily. So the smaller ones will probably do better for you.
Okay,
I think on the big ones, I would just make sure that we should get in some rains here. But if we do get into a dry spell, I definitely water the big guys.
Yeah, right, because they do droop pretty fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's
yeah.
good. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call. Well, we're kind of winding down here. We talked at the beginning about if you're going to do fall fertilizing, if you're only going to do it once, now's
this
the time.
Is
this is it. And also that this is a good time for if there are things that you have been thinking all summer you want to move, perennials. You pretty much can do any of them?
Yeah, pretty much any of them. Probably the only one that generally we get a little bit concerned about are some of the big bearded irises. The big rhizome thing has a tendency to rot. And so sometimes if you don't, usually we recommend you do that more in July and August when it's hotter and drier, usually hotter and drier. So you may want to hold off on that. But if it's not a hasn't been a big issue for you and you've been able to move them, that's fine. This is the only time we recommend to move peonies. This is it. We don't recommend a spring moving on those at all. So if you have peonies you need to move around, this is not time to do that.
And if you're thinking about maybe planting something new and a new perennial, is there enough time for it to get established
Sure.
before frost so that you actually could think
I'd
about
do
doing
it now.
That now?
But I do it now. I wouldn't wait too much later than this part. I think you have better success if you do it toward the beginning of September. So they still have a little bit of time to send out some roots.
All right. Well, at that, I guess we'll finish up with the promise that Sandy will be back again next month. So you'll have an opportunity to ask questions. And also just to want to mention that we have a program on WILL-TV that's on every week, a program called Illinois Gardener. Diane Nolan is the host. It's on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. There is an always changing panel of experts on the program. Sandy is on the program every once in a while, and other people from the U of I and from local greenhouses and plant businesses. And there is always an opportunity to call in and ask these kinds of questions. So if you have not, if you like gardening and you haven't seen the show, well, you should be a fan of this program. So WILL-TV, Thursday nights, 7 o'clock. Illinois Gardener. Otherwise, great. Sandy will be back next month.
Great.
Sounds Thank
good.
You. Sandy Mason is horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County.